Welcome to Learning to Teach, a podcast series about how universities across Europe are enhancing teaching through staff development, building capacity in learning and teaching, how this connects with the institutional strategies and policies, and the role of teaching in academic careers. I am your host, Tara Zhang, from the European University Association, EUA, and during this series, I will speak with experts in the field to share practices and perspectives that can inform and inspire others across the higher education sector. This podcast series is part of an Erasmus Plus funded project called Staff Development for Learning and Teaching at European Universities, STAFDEF. In this episode, I interview Paul McSweeney and Catherine O'Mahony from University College Cork in Ireland on effective strategies for organising and transforming staff development to foster a culture of teaching and learning. Paul is UCC's Vice President for Learning and Teaching, and Catherine is the Director of UCC's Centre for the Integration of Research, Teaching and Learning. University College Cork has had a long-standing and quite strong commitment towards the enhancement of teaching and learning. Could you briefly explain perhaps what is the place of staff development in teaching at UCC and how you actually organise it?
Thank you, Therese. We're actually quite proud of our staff development in teaching and learning in UCC. It's encouraged through a number of different initiatives, which are led centrally through our Centre for the Integration of Research, Teaching and Learning, our Teaching and Learning Centre, which was the first centre of its type established in the Irish higher education system. And we have the longest running formal programmes in staff development in teaching and learning in Ireland. We have an entry-level postgraduate certificate in teaching and learning in higher education, a postgraduate diploma and a master's. And the entry-level award, the postgraduate certificate in teaching and learning in higher education, we have hopefully around about 130 participants this year, which will make it one of the largest postgraduate programmes in the entire university. And in addition to our Teaching and Learning Centre, our Centre for Digital Education supports staff in best practice use of technologies. And also our library, which comes under my area as well, has a strong focus on staff development. Our university is composed of four colleges and also an emerging lifelong learning institute. And each college has a nominated vice head or vice dean for learning and teaching, with whom I interact very, very closely. And there's a lot of college level initiatives to celebrate and profile good practice examples in teaching. My office coordinates the President's Awards in Excellence in Teaching award scheme and also disperses grant money to encourage innovations in teaching and learning. So we have a lot of developmental supports, most of them through Catherine's Teaching and Learning Centre. But we also have showcases of good practice at college level and also institution level, various awards and a grant scheme to encourage innovation in teaching and learning. And I think all of those measures actually have given us a very vibrant learning and teaching culture on campus in what is fundamentally quite a research active university. And I'm really proud of that.
Thank you very much, Paul. Perhaps Catherine would like to add something and also tell us a bit more about how the CIRTL, the Centre for Learning and Teaching, promote or implement transformation in staff development to foster a culture of teaching and learning, this vibrant culture that, Paul, you just mentioned, Catherine.
So in terms of the kind of promotion, we think about that transformative aspect starting with the individual or the teaching team. And we ask staff to think about their own educational experiences and a lot of reflection about what shaped them as learners and how they might bring this approach into their teaching. We know staff are time poor and there's a lot of juggling pressures. They have to be disciplinary teachers. They're also digital content creators, accessibility champions, etc. So no one full staff member lands with all those skills or all that background and knowledge, and nor do they have endless time to kind of develop all of that. So we try to provide a lot of flexibility in how they can engage with staff development. So for us, it's about sometimes it's those long-term programs that people can keep engaged with and do small amounts over a year. Others are more maybe intense and immersive, like a week-long summer school, or even the engagement in kind of project works, which allow them to kind of really focus in on an aspect of change within their teaching. And we really try to encourage people to take a kind of a long term view of their own development of teaching. So it's like you make one change this year, you build on it next year, and you're being very, very intentional in developing that. And we try to put a sweep of supports around, be it the longer programs, the shorter courses that accrue to micro credentials and digital badges, or engaging in research. So it's multi spaces to connect with us and trying to link with staff and support them where they have time and capacity and passion to do that work.
Thank you very much, Catherine. You mentioned something quite important, which is this flexibility aspect, because we know, right, that time is a crucial factor and also a very challenging factor in engaging into staff development for many people and in many places. So thank you for this. Now, if I zoom out a little bit, if I can say, and think about the larger institutional perspective of UCC, what would you and both of you define are the factors that enable your center, but also enable UCC generally as an institution to drive this transition and also transformational aspects in for this vibrant learning and teaching culture that you mentioned. I don't know who would like to start here. Catherine?
Reflecting on this kind of question, I think one thing we do is we think about our reach. So our programs are offered to all staff who teach and support student learning. So that includes the admission staff who maybe run orientation sessions for students, the career staff who are supporting work integrated learning, our library staff, as well as the formal teaching staff. So that I think is really important, because we're trying to ensure that everyone feels that the educational mission of the university is their business. So I think that that kind of cultural focus is a crucial part of giving us kind of the impetus that it's needed to encourage everyone to see, you know, education, teaching and learning as part of that. So a huge enabler is that reach aspect and ensuring that the very many different people, like the administrative staff that are making decisions around modular changes, our IT services staff who are upgrading the tech in rooms, the more people are switched into and conversant with what are we trying to achieve in teaching and learning? What are we trying to achieve at an institution in terms of our educational mission? They'll just be better equipped to help think through those decisions so that they're supportive of teaching and learning and the inclusion of all learners. So I think that reach, scope and ensuring that more people see it as being their business.
And I might just jump in to raise just a really, we do take a very broad view of what defines teaching. And in many ways, any staff member with a student facing role that they could reflect upon, we can almost be encompassed in that. So our teaching and learning programs are certainly not only for academic staff. We take many others, as Catherine said. Looking at the bigger institutional pictures, though, and you're asking about enabling factors, I think my role as Vice President for Learning and Teaching is unique in the Irish higher education system. And I think it does act as sort of a counterbalance to a certain extent to make sure that the voice of learning and teaching is always present in the university leadership discussions and strategic decisions. And I've always been trying to advocate for a parity of esteem between learning and teaching and research. As I said, this is quite a research intensive university. So that's always comes there. And personally, I have never seen a conflict between learning and teaching and research. There really are the two pillars of academic life, and they should not come into conflict. We have a university level learning and teaching committee, and that has looked at a lot of data in particular as an enabler. It undertook a very extensive staff and student survey on student engagement recently as to what were the drivers around student engagement, as to what, you know, why are they choosing or not choosing to come onto campus, for example. And I think that evidence base is very important, because it allows us to move beyond anecdote and enables us to run campaigns to encourage greater use of lecture capture software and the needs of our growing and very diverse student population. We see ourselves fundamentally as a campus-based university, so we're using digital always to enhance that campus space.
Thank you very much, Paul. Perhaps I have a follow-up question related to what you just said. When you said, well, I'm advocating for this parity of esteem, and parity of esteem is that term that comes back again and again in our learning and teaching conversations we are also having with other colleagues across Europe. But, and you say, actually, it's not that difficult. I mean, it's not that difficult in the sense that you didn't really feel that there was such a gap, etc. Do you think the very strong culture you have of scholarship of teaching and learning and the overall weight you are putting into, I mean, your learning and teaching center is called the Center for the Integration of Research, Teaching and Learning, you know. Do you think that actually plays a role in the way learning and teaching, so the teaching activity itself, is being perceived by the whole academic community at UCC?
I think that's a very fair comment. I think the research element of our teaching and learning center would actually position it as one of the biggest research centers on campus outside of the STEM area. So there's a significant amount there, and we've always tried to encourage people. We start having most of our learners are our academic staff, so they'll have done the PhD. They're familiar with the research in general, and always the application is how you actually apply that research to your own teaching. But as I said at the beginning, I've always been a little bit uneasy about the term parity of esteem, because again, it tends to put teaching and learning in conflict or distinction from research, and really they are really two separate pillars of academic life. I mean, universities are not research centers. Right? Our fundamental role is developing the young minds that I see walking around outside my office at the moment, you know, of education. It's not that. That's what differentiates a university from a research center. And, you know, I'm a great believer that lecturers should lecture and professors should profess, no matter how successful they are as researchers. So it has become, our teaching and learning awards have become very much part of the academic career for academics at the moment. I mean, it's not actually anywhere in regulations. They're not obliged to do them generally, but essentially, you know, I mean, I think probably I would guess that 2/3 of our academic staff have some formal awards in teaching and learning. And I would say close to 100% of the younger academic staff coming through. So it's very much becoming part of the university culture.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you. Perhaps I can ask you a last question, and that's really for both of you to have your thought about the future, precisely. We often hear that there are so many developments around, right, in and also outside higher education, but that do impact learning and teaching, to just name a few, the use of artificial intelligence nowadays, but also more an increased focus on critical thinking that we should be developing as graduate attributes for students, sustainability skills, but also generally speaking, the change in student profiles that we may experience also at higher education institutions. How does your staff development activities address such continued development? Or how do you manage to stay future-oriented in a way in your offerings?
It's challenging, Therese, no doubt, because there's kind of key concepts and ideas and practices that staff need to grapple with to become effective teachers, right? The kind of almost threshold ideas and practices. But then there's the kind of just-in-time, time-bound kind of initiatives that often are linked to broader ideas, like even AI. When you really delve into assessment design and have a thoughtful approach to the assessment design, you actually protect against, if that's your concern, some of the AI considerations around assessment. But now that conversation's even moving towards, well, how do you build AI fluency and literacy amongst our students so they become adept at using this tool in the future world of work? So there are things that we have to do in partnership with people. So I think one of the ways of being future oriented that we do through our center is by providing kind of flexible offerings. So there's the standard programs, and then we have short courses that run for kind of, they're more thematic, but we also would run, so it's flexibility of offer that allows you to do that. But that's one part of it. The second part is partnership with other colleagues who have this experience, because we have one of the, in our own university, thankfully, one of the leading workers in the area of AI. And he brings great gravitas and experience and the historical kind of grounding of this work. So building partnerships with people who actually can bring those perspectives in are really important. Similarly with work that we would do around inclusive education, some of our colleagues that work in the kind of languages area have been grappling with intercultural communication for years. So they have a much deeper knowledge of this than, like, we're bringing a teaching and learning perspective. So it's those collective, the partnerships that we, and to try and do that in a paced way, because I would rather be future scanning as a centre and acting on research grants and things through ourselves, so that when these kind of topics come in, we're already ready. We've been part of those conversations. So connecting with yourselves in the EUA through the peer exchange groups, the Teaching and Learning Forum, through our own kind of development networks are really important for us, being kind of connected into those conversations. Podcasts like this, where we're just bringing up contemporary topics and exploring them and having opportunities to test ideas, to trial things that are, you know, we did a really nice pilot a few years back around VR, XR use, which then during the COVID years was actually used as a model for some of the onboarding of students in labs when they couldn't go into labs. So you'll never know when those initiatives and ideas will really kind of have their strong utility across the university. I think it's keeping the curiosity, being connected to networks and partnerships are the currency, the three ingredients for being more future oriented.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Yes, Paul.
I might just add on to that as well. I mean, to a certain extent as well, we capitalize on the curiosity of our colleagues. We have a very active internal grant system for annual grants for teaching learning enhancement projects. It's funded from our Higher Education Authority in Dublin. And the absolute amount of money is not very large, but it goes and gets amazing value out of that. For, you know, just looking at bright ideas from staff and from students to enhance teaching, as we had some great ideas there. And in many ways, many of those topics are quite future orientated, in addition to obviously many ones that have been there for a long period of time. And similarly with our teaching awards system, again, that brings out, we learn from our colleagues as to what interesting things that they are doing. But I will give the EUA a great shout out here, and, you know, that's it. We've all found that participation in events run by the UA has really given us a great perspective of what's happening across the continent in terms of learning and teaching. But also we've engaged with thematic peer groups, leadership programs, and so on. And those networks, you know, and also visiting teaching and learning centers, I found very useful anytime I've ever visiting a university, even for something completely different. I'll always try to visit the learning and teaching center and meet some of the people there who always come away with good ideas. And I look to Catherine and her team to keep that future focused eye on learning and teaching for the institution.
Thank you very much. So curiosity definitely is a nice way to define the future. And let's not forget, of course, universities are usually full of very, very intelligent people indeed. And building partnerships also to complement this picture would be definitely a good way to go towards the future.
Thank you very much, Catherine and Paul, for this interesting discussion. And thank you for listening. Learning to Teach is a podcast series produced by the European University Association as part of the EU co-funded project Staff Development for Learning and Teaching at European Universities, in short, StaffDev. If you would like to learn more about the StaffDev project, have a look at the links in the show notes. In our second episode next month, I will interview Gudrun Geistadottir from the University of Iceland. If you don't want to miss it, make sure to subscribe to our podcast.